you know, I'm not a big wave surfer, and I don't put myself into those very challenging wild places that often. So having something like this is pretty wild. It's like suddenly somebody's put you on top of a big wave on a surfboard, even though you're not surfing, and said, "Right, remember, you're not in charge. So anything could happen. What are you going to do with the next 20 seconds?" Hi, I'm Cormac.
And I'm Josh.
Welcome to the Living Project.
Be true, live wild.
Hello, and welcome to episode 23 of the Living Project podcast, the first of season three. And the first of 2021. And it seems only appropriate that today's episode is a little bit different. And that's because today's conversation features none other than my Living Project co-founder, Cormac Davey. It's a pretty special experience and seems a really special way to kick off this new year with a really cool chat with my best buddy. The aim of these conversations on the Living Project podcast is to dig deep into people's truth, as it is now, and the stories they've lived and created, which provide them definition and self-awareness. We ask them to consider where they find water, earth, fire and air, with the aim of shining a light on the universal human experience and the importance of engaging with the wild as part of being human. We aim to go deep, to celebrate vulnerability and appreciate we all have something to teach and can all learn from everyone on our path, if we so choose. Cormac was born and initially brought up in Ireland. Cormac's name in Gaelic means raven. And in Gaelic, and actually in Norse mythology, I imagine other mythologies that I don't yet know about, the raven is associated with wisdom. Now, I count myself as someone who knows Cormac relatively well. In this conversation, I learned so much more. In this conversation, Cormac shares some of his journey from Ireland to Bracknell, through an initial career of more than 15 years working in international development around the world, an absolute commitment and passion for exploring the esoteric, the spiritual. He shares trauma and its impacts, a cancer diagnosis, a diagnosis he describes lightheartedly as a cosmic kick up the arse, but which has had far-reaching impacts. Never shy of a quote or two, one of my favourites he drops in this conversation, is that the only truth in life is that all things we understand to be true now will one day be proven untrue, or something along those lines. Cormac is indeed the raven. His conscious decision to explore the world, its people, his own place within it, and his belief in an infinite human spiritual experience, and the way he communicates that in this conversation, is wisdom in and of itself. It was a real privilege to explore this conversation with my great friend Cormac. I hope it triggers some questions and thoughts in you, and I'm pretty confident it's an inspirational way to start this new year of the Living Project podcast. So let's get on with it. So this is an interesting one. Today you're on the other end of what we do on the podcast. I'm chatting with you. How do you feel about that?
I'm looking forward to it. I feel a little bit nervous. I'm just repeating to myself quietly to just be natural, just be myself, and not to have to say the perfect things.
Okay. So a little bit nervous, but committed to saying what feels natural, to experiencing it from the other side, to being the guest and not the host.
Yeah, I think it's really important, isn't it? We've asked some brave people in season one and season two to do this, and yet we haven't done it ourselves. So I think this is really important to get a sense of what it feels like and the challenges that are posed by being a guest, you know, because I've prepared a bio and I spent a lot of time doing that. And that in itself was a very important process to go through.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that, like part of the preparation for each episode that we do with a guest. We ask each of them to actually go through a quite, I suppose, deep process beforehand. You know, we asked them some deep questions, and you yourself have gone into that process. Like, so how was going through that process of doing that bio for you?
Well, I was doing some kind of journaling, end of year journaling anyway. So once I got into these questions, I was in that mindset. So once I got into the questions, I really ended up going into it quite deep rather than superficially, which I think for me helped with the journaling and really me thinking about the year that's gone, where I feel that maybe I'd like to move forward in the year ahead. So I found that just doing this without even doing a podcast, actually a really powerful journaling and sort of a self-coaching process.
Wow, okay. So yeah, it's been pretty important. And certainly, you know, reading it through, for me, it felt quite a brave, I don't know, I suppose self-exploration. And I think it's really brave of you to go first in this season. So I'm really looking forward to getting into this year with you. But I have, before we do, I have one more question, which is going through this process up to now and now beginning this, I suppose, shift in the podcast relationship for you. You're now the guest. What's it taught you about what we're trying to do with our podcast?
Yes. You know, we've been on a process, we've been learning, haven't we? And I think ultimately our podcast and The Living Project, what it's really about is digging deep. It's really asking people and ourselves to be brave in order to shine a light on the reality of this human experience. Because if it's superficial, I'm not sure, listening to it might be fun, it might just be interesting, and that's okay, but I don't think that's what we're about. We really want to shine some light on this experience so that it helps, firstly, us, as me as the guest today, to go through this process, and just to tell my story is very cathartic. But more than that, one would hope that whilst we each have to live our own experience, that by sharing this it and shining a light on that, it might have some power or some it might help somebody somewhere who's listening as well. I think to go beyond that very superficial layer of this is my story and, you know, I've done these great things, and it has to be more than that.
Yeah, so I don't know, the way I liken it, I suppose, is that we're kind of interested in the manure that feeds the growing of the plants as much as the plants themselves, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. You need the dark and the light, those two things. It's the yin and the yang, isn't it? You have to have both of those together. So there's no point talking about just the one. We have to talk about it in relationship to the other. You know, there's I found doing this process that actually realizing that the challenges in my life, the hard times, the darker times, are part of the story, that without them there's no real growth, there's no the light to talk about either. So they go together. So we should therefore, I feel the need to be honest about talking about both those things at the same time. So it requires a little bit of vulnerability, which I think is the challenge, the tricky bit. And as you, as the host today, that's something that we need to be mindful of as questioners, as to be kind to people and allow them to gently tell their story. You know, poke and provoke a little bit, but we're now realizing actually how hard or even terrifying it can be to talk about those dark things, and as well as the fun light things as well.
Okay, well, let's see how much I can poke and provoke and how kind I can be. Not always my strong point, so we'll give it a go.
Okay, I look forward to it.
So you know this, so this is kind of strange, like framing some of these questions for you, I think is going to be fun, and so we'll see. So, you know, we ask people when we do this process of kind of getting to know people and getting ready for the episode, we ask people who they are and how they got here. And obviously that's an epic question. It gives people, I think, an opportunity to, like you say, write their own story, you know, ascribe their own identity and own their journey. These episodes aren't about a full life story.
No.
Luckily for you, your bio and a bit more about your life story is available on our website. So if people do want to dig a bit more into your kind of life story, then that's there. But obviously I do have some questions around some of what I know already and some of what you provided in your reflective answering in that kind of self-coaching process to bring us to this episode. So are you ready, Cormac Davey?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
You were born and brought up in Ireland, and you left in the 1970s due to the Troubles, and you, your family made a home in the UK. Your name's Irish, Cormac, and you've told me in these answers, which I didn't know, and I found fascinating, which in Gaelic it means raven. So your name in Gaelic means raven. I wanted to ask you actually what that means to you. You know, your name's Cormac, it means raven. What does that mean to you?
Yeah. Well, for a lot of my life, I was quite embarrassed to have the name Cormac because it was so unusual and it signalled me out as something maybe different or other. It's a very Irish name and I was born in Ireland. But having to move to England because of the Troubles at the time, suddenly I was exposed to that reality. So when I went to school, I quickly changed my name and told everybody my name was Brian. And then people came to knock on my door eventually whilst we settled into Bracknell in Berkshire, which is our landing point in England, asking for Brian. My parents said, no, you got the wrong address. There's no Brian living here. And then they realised it was me and they were, why are you calling yourself Brian? But I think it was a deep, but it was some element of trauma that I'd had, even in Ireland, where when I'd first gone to school, I told people my name was Cormac and they said, oh, the first question, you know, and this is, we're talking at primary school where people would say, oh, are you Protestant or Catholic? And I'd be like, I'm not really sure. I'm English, you know, really confused. Like, what do they want me to tell them? And, you know, and then straight away got a punch on the nose and had to be collected from school by my mother, you know, because it had all gone pear-shaped. I go, why did someone punch my lights out? I said I was English. What's wrong with that? Well, you're living in Ireland, in Northern Ireland. You don't say things like that. I say, what? So then you go to England and you say, right, OK, better be careful here. Better fit in. So I think that was the what it was like initially as a younger person. But as I've got older, I've learned to love that uniqueness of that name. And I feel, well, whereas I haven't always, I don't feel Irish through and through, but I definitely feel more connected to those roots, those Irish roots. And as you mentioned, I'm obviously very interested or become very interested in pagan a Neolithic history and kind of the marks on the landscape, like, you know, stone circles and the like. And I think there's a lot of kind of that Gaelic roots that I've got is definitely part of why I may be attracted to those sorts of things.
Okay. And the raven specifically, what does the raven mean in Gaelic? And do you feel connected to that bit of it? You know, I know you're interested in it, but do you feel connected to that bit of it?
Well, yeah, I mean, because it's associated with wisdom and knowledge and partly getting older. You know, I think as you get older, I have anyway, you maybe just start to acknowledge that you've been lucky to live for that length of time. You know, in my case, 55 years this next year coming, you feel that you gathered a little bit of wisdom for what it's worth. I mean, we all have to live our own experience, but years gone by, I felt like I had a lot of theory and knowledge. I could spout it out and it sounded good, but it wasn't really coming from a lived experience and from some wisdom. So I'm feeling that right now. So maybe that's why I'm connecting more with that kind of raven mythology.
Wonderful. Accepting of your identity as a raven. okay, you touched on something there, which was clearly quite a powerful experience in terms of your experience in Ireland as a child and what that meant coming over to the UK. And you were brought up Roman Catholic, which must have been even more confusing for people when you said, no, I'm English. And they're like, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
But in terms of now, who you are now, that's pretty far from my experience of you. Well, maybe except for the incense bit. you know, you also touched on there your love of the Neolithic and the marks in the landscape. And, you know, I know you to be a pretty spiritual human. I mean, you've had me humming in burial mounds and chanting mantras pretty recently. So
yeah,
I suppose what I'm interested in is where this spirituality came from and what beliefs, if any, do you hold true now in your life?
Well, I suppose, as you highlighted, it definitely came from being brought up a Roman Catholic and a practicing Roman Catholic. So we went to church as a family and I became an altar boy. And then, of course, as you get to a younger adult, you start to question. And in my case, I probably questioned a little bit, you know, quite deeply, and thinking, what do I believe in? Is this important to me or is this not? And as I went through life, I moved away from a kind of a Roman Catholic tradition, and I don't go to church and I haven't been to church for many years, although I have no problem going into a church. But I've been more attracted to other spiritual practices, you know, including the paganistic ideas of spiritual practice, but more importantly, and maybe just by a bit of fate, you know, my first wife Fiona really got into something called Kundalini yoga when we lived in Ecuador, and that's something that I started to get interested in do, and I just got very attracted to it, and so I kind of followed that tradition and went on to become a teacher in Kundalini yoga, and I still practice it today. So I suppose that has been the sort of like thread, if you like, of where I'm at now. So yes, I do feel like a spiritual being, you know, a human being having a spiritual experience. I think that's a key sort of truth for me. And I think the other thing about being very drawn to spiritual thinking or beings is that, you know, in our physical world, we tend to accept things and we see things as truth. You know, these things exist. Our societies are like they are because that's the truth. That's how they are. That's the best way to do things. But I think when you're more spiritual and you have a more spiritual perspective, you see truth slightly differently. And I think this sort of like physical world we're in is just a transitory thing. And I think it's also, something that Einstein said that's always stuck with me since I first heard it was that the only truth is that one day everything we hold to be true will one day be proven untrue. I think that's quite liberating because, you know, we can hold on to things and saying this is the truth. But it's quite reassuring to know that, well, it's only true as long as we choose to believe it's true. And that can be from anything, can't it? From this whole idea of kings and queens being divine, you know, and they ruling because they have a direct link to God. You know, we don't accept that as a truth anymore. And I think that's a good thing. So, you know, I think that's another central tenet to how I see myself in this world, that things ebb and flow and they change. There's a constant process of change, and that we shouldn't get too hung up on something being the right thing or the truth, because it will ebb and flow and change.
Okay, so that's a belief that you hold that helps you go out into the world and make sense of the world for you and this human experience, that things are transitory, change is present, truths change. So, you know, there's that belief. Are there any other beliefs that you've kind of crystallized that you think, yeah, this is something that actually, you know, like, you know, over time, or that you've crystallized within you that you hold that help you go out into the world as you are?
So whilst I do believe fundamentally, first of all, it's about working on myself and change within, I'm also pretty sure right now that once you are confident and have some sort of strength of purpose within and working on yourself, I think it gives you a bit more confidence and ability to actually project that out and actually seek to maybe contribute or influence the world around you, you know, even if it's in a small way. So I think when I think about influencing the world around me, I suppose I'm ultimately thinking about this global perspective and this having a fairer, more equitable world in which we live. But that's a big thing, isn't it? So like, I have to boil that down to kind of like a more human level. So I think on that more personal human level, I suppose I'm constantly looking to bring equity and harmony to my relationships and to how I interact with other people and in the work that I do. Ultimately, I think it might be about those sorts of issues, those values, you know, whether I'm working in the outdoors with young people or whatever it is, I think I'm constantly looking to help people develop themselves, but also to kind of, in a way that will bring harmony to them, but also more harmony, equality to the society which we're all operating in. I know that's like quite might seem quite huge and nebulous idea, but I think we can boil those big concepts down into practical actions and everyday activities.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is nebulous and you can run down rabbit holes, can't you? And I think you kind of got to put some work in to kind of think about those things and understand, you know, where you want to be and how you can show up in a way that fits your values. And we're going to come on to some of that as we go through the conversation. You kind of alluded to in there to kind of to what you do working with young people or working outside. And I suppose the big bit for us at the Living Project, we're working together on the Living Project with a shared belief in the power of the wild. And that comes from both of us having individual relationships and journeys with the wild. And although we have this shared belief, we're two individuals, as I said, with our own connection with the wild and meanings attached to it. So let's get into what the wild means to you.
Wow, yeah. Well, the wild is a place. Very simply put, the wild, I think, is where I'm exposed to the elements, you know, water, earth, fire and air, and where it enables me to be more connected to nature. You know, we are part of nature, and I think one of our challenges as a humanity is that we've become quite disconnected from nature, and so the wild is where I feel I get that connection. That's it simply put. And in some cases, for me, the wild is just it's quite benign. It's quite friendly. It's enjoyable. It's good. It's ultimately good for my well-being. And I spend a lot of time in that benign place with young people, with adults, on my own, with people that I love, just being outdoors. And I think that's very healthy for me on a day-to-day basis. But also the wild is maybe a more inhospitable, more dangerous, more challenging place. And I've also think that's a value. So, you know, things that I've done, I'm not a particularly wild person, you know, compared to some of the people that I admire or that I even know, you know, but things like doing a trip to Mont Blanc, that to me is maybe a more extreme wild. And it challenges you in a slightly different way to that kind of more benign wild that I talked about. But so there's two elements there, but I think going into both of those are really important for my well-being and really instructive to letting me understand what I perceive my limits to be and challenging me to go outside those limits and explore new sort of boundaries. And when you're in a place like, you know, when you're in an extreme place, I mean, maybe, you know, as we've done, Josh, and I'm sure many people listening will understand, I don't know, just while camping in the Lake District and you know, you've suddenly got a 70 mile an hour wind lashing at your tent, you know, you're not sure you're going to make it through the night. That conjures up certain amount of reflection, and like it puts things into perspective, and you're awed by the natural world, aren't you? And when you wake up in the morning and the sun comes through, you're like, wow, I'm still alive, I'm here, this is amazing, I'm so grateful to be alive. And I think, you know, just being out of this, are built, you know, we live in this modern world, we're in these comfortable houses with heating systems and we go to supermarkets. I think we need to also take time to go to those wild places, and that they're different for each person.
Amen. And in, you know, it's really cool to be, you know, to be working with you in that space that, you know, we do share that belief about the importance and the value of connecting with the wild, listening, observing, you know, being in the benign and being in the epic. And you know, we're recording this in the UK, where we're now, you know, almost the whole country now is back into tier four. People have, you know, got stay at home orders, and you know, I'm sure you have too, but I've really noticed people like really appreciating the opportunity to go outside again. But I think, you know, there's gonna be a real need to almost remember at some point, for people to really deeply remember what connecting with the wild is, and kind of rehumanizing ourselves as part of an environment and an ecological system, rather than separate to, and kind of, you know, these small exposures to it. And you know, I think I can speak for both of us, that really looking forward to trying to be a part of that in some way, both through these conversations that kind of that shine a light on people's experience with the wild, as we're going to kind of go on to with you, but also providing, you know, our wild 24s, which are very stripped back, powerful experiences of being in the wild and reconnecting with ourselves and others in the wild, and realizing that the importance to our well-being and who we are ourselves. So we've heard what the wild means to you. It's clearly a powerful thing for you. We love the reality that the wild also reflects us as humans, right? So, you know, the wild has the elements of water, earth, fire and air, but so do we as humans, you know. Water, reflection, always moving, always present, earth, you know, grounding, rooting, values, you know, fire, like ignition, setting fire to things, burning things away, and air, like that light time, the kind of the confidence, the fun, the play. Which of those elements, water, earth, fire and air, resonates with you the most, and why, Maka?
Okay, I will state the obvious and say all of them are relevant to my life on a daily basis, but right now it's definitely air. I feel like over the last 10 years I've done a lot of reflecting and grounding. I kind of feel quite clear about what my values are, and I have done for quite a long time. I might every now and again need to just check those, but I'm confident and clear about those. And I've used fire, you know, in some real challenging times, you know, over the last 10 years. I already mentioned, you know, I went through a divorce. And, you know, in that moment, I think fire eventually becomes hugely important, because, you know, when you go through that kind of trauma, you get angry and you become a victim. And in order to get past that, you've got to burn some stuff away. You've got to get past that. So I've used fire a lot, you know, in that kind of alchemist, you know, to make change. And, you know, we talked about yoga before, you know, I think air also, when I see it connected to the chakras, this is about the heart chakra. So through, you know, going through those that divorce and other sort of life experiences, I feel that I've kind of pretty much worked hard on those other things, and now I'm getting into the more subtle realms where I feel more comfortable, confident about expressing myself, who I am, and being creative and contributing. It's a bit of a glib phrase, isn't it? But even in yoga terms, they talk about that fourth chakra in the heart is where you start to think about and B, thinking about we, not just your the me, you know. So I think that's where I'm at. And for me, it's about the confidence at long last to project myself and to be creative and to make contributions and to be, to have a bit more fun with life and be a little bit more lighthearted with life itself, you know. Even when there are challenging times, you just take it a little bit more in your stride. So in that sense, it's definitely air for me now. And the living project that we're involved in together, I think, is the ultimate expression of that. Here I am now talking to you, projecting out a story of my life to other people, and wanting to engage with other people in these wild experiences. That is really ultimately about creativity and contribution and trying to support other people in this kind of like connecting with nature in order to explore themselves and to, you know, develop themselves as human and spiritual beings in whatever way they feel is their path. So yes, definitely air.
Just a little interruption. Right now, Cormac resonates most with air. Which element do you resonate most with right now? You might have heard us quickly mentioning our Wild 24s, a powerful 24-hour experience with the wild. We love these events, and Cormac and I are hosting 6 of them in 2021. You can find out more details at www.thelivingproject.life. We love them so much, we're providing them on a donation payment basis. So if you want to reconnect with the wild and give yourself a powerful experience this year, check us out at www.thelivingproject.life, sign up to a Wild 24, pay whatever you can, and we look forward to meeting you then. Right, back to the chat. You did mention in there about divorce.
Yeah.
And about some challenging moments that have led you to, you know, a current air being the dominant whilst they're all kind of still around, mm-hmm. but it led you to this real feeling of air in your life now. Mm. And one of the reasons, you know, the element of water is so powerful is that it's not just about the reflective capacity of water, but about water has to make room for obstacles along its journey or, you know, demolish them. As you've mentioned, our beliefs and present ways of living are often shaped by the obstacles and challenges along the journey and how we manage those or how we learn from them. And you've said, you know, you've had to use fire and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question for you is what challenges or obstacles, you've mentioned divorce, there have also been some other significant obstacles on your life journey that have shaped your journey. Be really interested to hear about some of those.
Yeah, I think the divorce, which was about 10 years ago, you know, I'm happily remarried to Carrie, you know. So, you know, I've definitely gone through a process. We were talking 10 years ago, but it was, you know, in itself, it was such a major moment. It's where I talk about that truth. I settled into a place of comfort, of truth, and that came crashing down. So that you realize this truth that you think you have and how things are and how things should be and where you fit within that comes crashing down. You know, this illusion you've built up of truth is no longer true. And when that happens, you kind of strip pretty bare and you have to, well, you know, you've got this choice of whether or not how to build the blocks back and what building blocks to do. So there's a major moment in my life there. But, you know, I think allied to that, I think as I've got older, there's been little smaller things like, you know, the usual stuff that we all have, like especially being I told you about, you know, a bit about my background, but especially, you know, I think when you've left a country, gone to another country, you try to fit in, you know, lucky enough, I was able to go to university and get a professional job. But, you know, there's still some sense of like this working class person and an imposter syndrome. How did I get here? Do I deserve to be here? You know, not living true to my values, maybe not in the early days knowing what my values were, but certainly maybe trying to impress other people, chasing other people's dreams, and creating lots of diversions, delusions around life that stopped me actually living life fully. You know, when I was doing this work to prepare, you know, an Oscar Wilde quote jumped out at me, and he said, "To live is the rarest thing in the world. Most people exist, that is all." Now, at different times of my life, I would have heard that and go, "That's rubbish. I'm living right now. This is life." But when big things happen to you, I think you realise that actually maybe you haven't been living. You've been existing. You've just been on some kind of automatic, you know, process. So things like this, whilst you don't wish them on people, they wake you up, they give you a big kick. So divorce is a key one. I think even more relevant to me right now, because that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've gone through that process and learned a lot. Yeah. But right now, you know, at the beginning of this year, I received a cancer diagnosis. You know, was nothing like that kind of cosmic kick up the arse to wake you up and make you re-examine life. Are you living or just existing? So those have been, I think, those are the two major challenges, I think, that I faced in my life. And one, I think, is more pertinent to me now than you know, the cancer diagnosis, than the divorce.
Okay. And when we talk about that cancer diagnosis, and you know, you shared it in the final episode of season two.
Yeah.
And I've been aware of it, and have appreciated the sharing of that of what that means to you throughout the journey. You know, I've never had a diagnosis like that, so I don't know how it feels or what it causes in you. But
yeah,
if you mention that Oscar Wilde quote, when you received that, what you call a cosmic kick up the arse,
yeah,
of a cancer diagnosis, and you asked yourself that question, am I really living or am I existing? What did you come up with?
What I came up with was that I've been allowed myself to go into automatic pilot most of the time. And it can be comfortable. It's not that it's not necessarily a bad place, but every now and again, little shards of light, you know, pierce through the floorboards, don't they, and into your consciousness and go, hey, you're procrastinating. You've got limited time left. What are you doing with this? You know, so yeah, it definitely made me feel that whilst there was lots of great things in my life and lots of things I'd learned and developed over time, this was another moment to go, hold on a minute. How can you make the most of those and build on those? You've got precious time left. What are you going to do now? You know, that air, we talked about air, your challenge is to let go of all of those things that are holding you back, this imposter syndrome, this lack of confidence to project your voice. Now's the time to be you and project yourself into the world in a more forcible, true way. That's, you know, I think I'm lucky in the sense that I feel that I've probably done quite a bit of work on myself over the years, and the spiritual track that I've taken, I think it gave me a foundation which to rationalize and put into perspective what I was being told. Of course, it was a shock. Oh, I'm sorry to tell you, but, you know, you've got a chronic cancer diagnosis. Ooh, you know, that's a shock. It's a real shock to the system. But I feel like I had the foundations, at least. I'd worked on this reflection, this water, this earth, you know, my values and fire through the divorce and all of that, that I think it gave me a foundation to deal with this. I mean, that's put it in perspective. It's not this cancer diagnosis is not going to kill me anytime soon. It's not that serious. It's chronic in the sense that this was caught at an early stage. I'm fit and healthy. There's no treatment that I'm on. All my bloods and vitals are good. I'm fit and healthy, but I do have something that is there. So it does force you to think. But I think I could conclude it very simply by stating that by making further changes and emphasizing certain things in my life that are important, I think I can live the next 20 years of my life healthier and happier than the last 20 years. So that's where I've come to now, year down the path of getting the diagnosis and trying to come to terms with it. Where I'm sitting right now talking to you, that's where I've come to. So I think it's quite a empowering, positive, healthy place that says, ooh, I wouldn't wish this on anybody or even myself, but hey, it happened. But I've used it to propel me to grow, you know, to propel me to what I think needs to be the next stage of my life, which is a little bit more conscious, a bit more aware and less existing and more living.
It's very interesting to hear you talk about that. And as you're talking, I've been thinking about something a guy once said to me on a beach in Bali, which was that look at all these people walking around thinking that they're not going to die. Mm. Now, forgive me for going here, yeah. And I'm exploring it as we chat, okay? But you received a cosmic kick up the arse, a cancer diagnosis that it's almost like a kick in the face of your own reality of life, your own mortality. And there's a part of me that when I'm thinking about human beings living their life, the reality is that whether it's through cancer or something else, the moment you are born, you have a diagnosis of death. That's the only thing you know,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I guess I'm wondering what it is about someone telling you that reminder of mortality through a cancer diagnosis that is different from an understanding that we live with every day, which is we're going to die.
Mm.
How is it different, I suppose, or why does it, there is a reality that we all have a diagnosis of death from birth, and yet a painful reminder of your own mortality that is out of your control is a big, impactful thing.
Yes, it is. But I agree with what I think you're saying is that it shouldn't be, because I think, well, you're a surfer and I like telling this story. It may not be true, but I've mentioned it before with you and Rusty, one of our guests, and you both laughed at me, but I heard it somewhere, so I might as well repeat it. You know, I think for surfers, big wave surfers, maybe, they know that what they want to do and what they feel compelled to do might kill them, like in the next 20 minutes.
Mm.
And they might be doing that for, you know, most days. And so they ask themselves, is this today a good day to die? And if they say yes, they go out into the big wave and accept their fate. And if they say no, they just don't. So I think that's them in that situation, going out into that wild, again, bringing it back to that, when you go into that more beyond the benign wild, I think you're forced to reflect on your mortality and that, you know, life is a precious thing and it could be taken away at any moment. But when we don't go into those places and we don't ask those questions, we're in automatic pilot, aren't we? So we don't really think about them in any realistic or honest or practical way.
Yeah, we exist and we don't remember that life is precious.
Mm. Yeah. So in my case, I think, you know, I'm not a big wave surfer and I don't put myself into those very challenging, wild places that often. So having something like this is pretty wild. It's like suddenly somebody's put you on top of a big wave on a surfboard, even though you're not surfing, and said, right, remember, you're not in charge. So anything could happen. What are you going to do with the next 20 seconds? And it's quite powerful.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you're... Yeah, I think I just find, you know, I find it interesting that often there, you know, it is when people, there's a major thing that reminds you of your mortality that people then forego on to make decisions that are healthier for themselves and healthier for the people around them.
Well, to be truthful, our purpose of being engaged with the Living Project and having these wild 24s is because we believe even with 24 hours, no one's giving you a cancer diagnosis, but you're going out into the wild with other people to connect with yourself, to connect with others and the planet around you in a powerful way. In 24 hours, you can have something just as powerful hit you as a cancer diagnosis, and it's not. So we believe in that, and we don't want... I don't want to wait around for another big whammy to come and hit me to go, oh, damn, I've got even less time, but now I need to do this. No, this is the one. There are no more big whammies. Like, that's it. And you know, of course, like you and others, I've done lots of interesting things in my life which have prompted reflection and change and made me more awake. Yeah. But you have to keep on it, don't you? Because it's so easy just to sort of drift off and fall asleep.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Brave reflections, Cormac. You say you are air. That was a brave and insightful and loving, full of integrity reflection with water. So thanks for sharing that. Let's move on to Earth. I think, you know, we've touched on some of your beliefs. We've heard about your spirituality, your connection with the wild. And I think most people who experience time with Cormac as a human find you a pretty earthy, grounding soul, and grounded soul. You know, there's a peace and a grounded feeling in just being around you. And in the work that we do beforehand, you know, it's you know, that we ask those questions, like, you know, to do with Earth, like, what are your values and how do you live them? And the response you gave is the change one of the responses you gave was, the change I seek is to realize a fully conscious human experience that is ultimately about experiencing my infinite spiritual nature. I guess I'd like to know, what does experiencing your infinite spiritual nature even mean?
Oh, well, as I said at the beginning, you know, I do believe one of my truths, although I said there is no real truth, I think there are some absolute truths beyond that statement, which is that I am a human being, but I'm having a spiritual experience. And I don't have any proof of this, and it's not coming from a religious place. But, you know, each morning when I do my practice, it's mainly a Kundalini yoga practice, I finish it off by saying Sat Nam, which is a Sikh word. It's a greeting, but it's quite profound. It means in English, it's quite crude to convert it into English, but it means something like, truth is my identity. And I think for me, that identity is that I'm having a human experience, but I'm a spiritual being. There's something more, and I don't have proof. All I know is that when I meditate, not always, but when the meditation goes well, I feel that I am observing. I'm the observer and the observed, if you know what I mean. And that means I'm not just in my body. I'm not just this Hulk, this physical entity. I'm something more. It's so intangible. It's quite nebulous, but it's a feeling, and it allies with this sense of, I do, you know, obviously I was at home in my flat, my house in London at the time, and you know, I'd probably been smoking a little bit of marijuana around that time, and I was lying on my bed and the sun was coming through the skylight, and I just was going, I suddenly got carried away in thought about scale and size. I was like, oh, what does an ant contemplate when it's sat on the slate of the roof, and does it perceive me? How does it perceive me? I'm so much bigger than it. And then I just have to go off on these sort of like tangents of thought. But, you know, I suppose by doing that, it led me to kind of, I suppose, yeah, it leads to more of a feeling of, we only perceive something within our own scale, and something, another scale, we can't perceive really what's out there. We might have a sense or a feeling, and I suppose that's why we have astronauts. They go and explore and they go off the edge and then they come back and tell us a little bit about what happened when they fell over the edge. But, you know, that's the same thing. I've gone to my edges and fallen off the edge and I've gone, ooh, I felt something. There was something there. I can't quite tell you what it was, but I had a feeling about it. So that to me is this spiritual experience. And I say infinite in the sense that I don't think spirit is something that is contained in a physical limitation. So therefore, I think it's got some infinite to it, and beyond that, I can't tell you anything more. It's just a feeling. And going back to the ant, you know, I also made me realise, or at least come back from this edge and go, I think truth, it's not something you read in a book. It's not an intellectual thing, because an ant and I myself have a different level of intellect, but surely every living creature can instinctively understand the truth. That's all it is. It's an instinctual thing. It's not an intellectualized thing. It's everything must do, including the ant, including the smallest living entity, must know that same truth as I'm capable of knowing. That's essentially what I think and believe, and that's what I mean by infinite spiritual nature.
Yeah, and I appreciate sometimes there aren't always words to put something in a box. I love your ultimate conclusion is that it's an instinct, it's a feeling. And that's what gives you your grounding and understanding of place in the world.
Yeah.
I suppose I have one very serious question that comes out of it, which is, are you therefore an astronaut of the human spirit or someone who enjoys really strong acid?
I like the astronaut of the human spirit.
Cool. Well, let's go with that then. So let's move on to fire. You've mentioned it a couple of times. What does fire mean to you, and how are you finding it in your life right now?
I mean, I love fire. Who doesn't love lighting fires and watching them and sitting around them? It's a very communal, powerful experience. And, you know, more recently when we were pioneering and developing the idea of the Wild 24, we went out into an ancient oak forest and we lit a fire and we sat around together. You know, that's such a special experience. And I think some things we shared, but other things we didn't. But the fire, looking into the fire, being warmed by the fire, it allows thoughts to flow freely, and dreams to sort of like bubble up to the surface, and just sharing those ideas, it feels like a very non-judgmental place to do that. You know, we give ourselves permission to do stuff around a fire that we maybe wouldn't do in other times.
So let's take that idea of hopes and dreams. Okay, and you talked earlier about you know, when you're in that place of air, you go kind of beyond self and are able to look outwards and project into the world and contribute and be part of something.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take this fire thing away from, I suppose, yourself.
Yeah.
To looking outwards in terms of hopes and dreams. Like, what current global or local issue are you passionate? Are you burning like the fire? What are you passionate about? And how do you seek to contribute?
The environment, climate change. And I think also connected to that, I think if we're really going to, you know, I've done things myself. What have I done? You know, there's the me. I've thought, right, okay, what can I do to contribute? So along with Kerry in our house, you know, we've put some solar panels in. We've signed up to an energy company to offset our carbon footprint of our energy use as well.
Mm.
You know, there's things that we don't, you know, thinking about what we eat, trying to eat more locally, trying to less dairy, less meat, you know, and having, I've personally got an intention to move towards being, by the end of the year, next year, eating even less meat and being more plant-based. And maybe I'll get to a point where I'm feel capable of becoming fully vegetarian or vegan. It's those sorts of things, I think, on a personal level. But I think I'm acutely aware of that change within me and what I can do to contribute. But I also, having been involved in international development, I'm also acutely aware that how our society is structured is a massive factor in whether or not we can address these human crises around climate change and our environment, you know, and how we, because we are nature, we need to have that harmony, and if we break that totally, we're doomed, you know. And I think, you know, how ultimately our society is structured in a way, yeah, we're coming up with these nice protocols and global agreements, but I do believe that in many ways they're trying to achieve a solution without changing the structure that's causing the problem in the first place.
Yeah, they're treating the symptom, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, thinking about, you know, you and I have both travelled a lot and we've visited countries far and wide, you know, and I think being from that privilege of being in a rich consumerist culture, you know, we have to accept that we bear more, you know, our cultures have become very, or society has become very rich from plundering resources, you know, human resources, slavery, colonialism, you know, and the way the economic structures are still organized definitely weigh things in our advantage. So we have to take more of the responsibility, and we have to accept that. Yeah, okay, whilst, say, Ecuador is cutting down its Amazon rainforest, that's bad. They should be more enlightened and not do that. And we can, you know, get on their case to say that they shouldn't. But we also have to accept that often, you know, there are other circumstances that force them to be unenlightened and to do that for survival. And we need to recognise those inequalities and the way society and global society structured are responsible. So that you know, that's a big thing. What can I spent 15 years working in that realm, and you know, it's really a traumatic experience to go through when you start to really think about these things, but and how difficult it is. But I think there are still things I can do to contribute towards that.
So I suppose two major things that are kind of interlinked. You've said that you want to contribute to. You know, your, you know, part of your journey was, you know, has been working in global development, so you have some understanding of systemic challenges that contribute to that are contributing to a major issue that you're also very passionate about, that you want to contribute to, which is, you know, the climate crisis and the environment. And there's a feeling in you that there's a lot of kind of sticky tape and sticky plasters going over without really cleaning out the wound. And, you know, social media gives us and stuff like that gives us the opportunity to kind of, you know, nail somewhere like Ecuador for cutting down the rainforest, but without, you know, actually going into the systemic causes that lead to the need for, you know, a decision to be made about whether, you know, whether to cut it down or not. And having to make the decision to cut it, you know, to cut it down. So yeah, and I think just sharing that, you know, just sharing that awareness is part of contributing. You know, you remember our episode with in season two with Jeffrey Payne. You know, his sharing his awareness of, you know, his experience of the kind of the World Bank's approach to individual land ownership and the challenges that causes. You know, I think, you know, it's about talking about it, isn't it? And about, you know, understanding that you want to contribute and seeking to do something, seeking to be a part of change, both within yourself and outwardly as well. So,
yeah,
thanks for sharing that, mate.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to that, I mean, I've been reading a fascinating book called The Book of Trespass, Crossing the Lines That Divide Us by Nick Hayes. You know, what it's re-engaged me with is thinking this book is about the UK, but it's talking about the reality is that the illusion that we've built up around us, the story, the myth that we've built up around us about our country and its greatness is essentially built around private property.
Yeah.
And at the moment, you know, 92% of the land is excluded from everyone other than the people that own it, and 97% of the waterways. I think that's a huge challenge, a huge problem. And I think it's at the heart of the systemic issues that are stopping us really being able to change society, to bring in real approaches that can address these human crises of the environment and climate change. The reason being is because the very few rich landed people and owners attract all the money and the power and the wealth. And why would they want to change that? They've created this whole myth and story around it.
Yeah.
And we've all, you know, there's been a history of working class protest as the commons have been enclosed, as we've been forced into industrial complexes. And now with this COVID-19 and the need to get out and roam and be in nature is starting to present itself, people are starting maybe to start to go, hold on a minute, why is it that I can't walk over there? There's 25,000 acres. I can't go into it. There's a wall around it. There's an individual who owns it. But I can't go in there. Oh, there's a green dotted line on the map. That's a right of way that I could walk along here. But to maintain that, so I can walk it, as a taxpayer, I have to pay that rich landowner to maintain it. So he can give me the right to walk across this narrow patch of land so I can exercise. To me, it's just nuts.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's not a system that's going to fix our challenges.
No.
But, you know, people like Nick Hayes in this book and Jeff Payne are being brave and saying, okay, private ownership of land, we've been down there, look what it's done. It's created this neoliberal capitalist system that's rampant. Right now, the government is in the middle of debating a new law, which is about criminalising trespass. That, again, is all about maintaining the status quo of private land ownership. And I've written to my MP, and that process alone, along with thousands of others, and we highlighted it on the Living Project Facebook page, meant that it has to be debated. So it's going to be debated in January. But the point being, I think what they're debating is the whole thing about trespass. So should it, you know, you can't, clearly you can't trespass. If you do, you can be told to leave. But trespass itself is not a criminal act. You can be criminalised for other breaches of the peace and all of these things. But trespass, no. And, you know, our forefathers and, great men and women before us have gone out and protested to give us access to land. And I think this sounds like a backward step. So we can write in legally, but interestingly, the more land that's privatised, you can't protest on private land. So the act of protest is being eroded here as well. So I think this is just one little example of what's going on in our world that we can choose to ignore, or we can choose to do something about, or at least voice our opinion about it in a peaceful way. Mm. And knowing that we've never achieved anything without protest of some level. So I think this is the air for me as well. It's also saying, what can I do, just me, myself, with a community of other people? What can we do in a small way to play our part, give our voice some air? And I think the Living Project, I know the Living Project is a part of that. So I think you can hopefully get a sense of how I think these things are connected, and I feel quite passionate right now about these particular issues.
Yeah, brilliant. And you linked it to air, summarised it brilliantly. Anyone would think that usually you are a podcast host and not a guest. So I got one last question for you, mate. After all this analysis of the infinite that is your human life, and how you see the world, you know, these epically meaningful and epically insignificant lives we lead, what one piece of wisdom would you share from your journey so far? And I'm going to chuck this out to you, is don't give me, you've shared some wonderful quotes from other people that you're inspired by, but don't give me a quote by someone else. Give me a quote from you. What one piece of wisdom from Cormac Davey would you share from your journey so far?
Okay. Wow. You know, that's really, it's important, but it's really tough, isn't it? Because you have to live your own experience. But from my lived experience, I would say that what is of real value to me is the engagement and work I've done on myself. You know, so what I'm talking about is getting to the point where I have a healthy practice. I'm looking after my health, I'm looking after my well-being, I'm looking after my mind, you know. So I've got a healthy daily practice, and that's taken a lot of years to develop and investigate and get to. So that investment, I think, is the most valuable that any of us can make. So whatever it takes, you know, for me, everything from going into a desert and sitting with 1,000 other people, sticking my arms in the air in a V-shape, meditating and on a deep breath, you know, for 60 minutes, thinking, I don't know if I can do this more than 5 minutes, to going out to Greece and with an opera singer and being, you know, exposed to the brutality of opening your lungs and singing and being brutally criticized to enable you to find your voice within all these layers of stuff you put around you. So all those things, you know, those are the things I remember, those are things that I value, the things that I've put energy into that have given me this practice, if your daily ritual that I now have. I think that's what my advice would be, that anything you do for yourself to is never wasted. It's going to pay you back double, triple.
I love that. And you love a circular a circular conversation that comes back to the beginning. At the beginning, we talked about your name, Cormac, in Gaelic meaning raven. Raven is a symbol of wisdom. And there you have shared with us that one piece of wisdom that you have learned from. I mean, you've learned lots of bits of wisdom, but you've shared that one piece, that final piece of wisdom from your journey so far, which is, as I understand it, as you've said it, is invest in yourself and developing healthy practices that enable you to feel like the best version of you and therefore go out into the world as the best version of you.
Yes, you've put it so much better than I did, but thank you, Josh. That was good to hear. I think that's essentially it.
Magical, my friend.
Yeah. I mean, just what if I could add one last thing? I think it's always really important, you know, what I am feeling right now. Like, I feel, it's been a very self-indulgent process and experience. And I did say at the beginning, you need to give yourself permission to be self-indulgent and work on yourself and be the change, let the change come within. You know, I strongly believe that. But I don't want anyone to listen to this and go away thinking, oh, Cormac's reached some sort of like higher nirvana or place of enlightenment. I would say no. You know, I have got to this point through the journey of the love and support of so many wonderful other human beings that have stuck by me and challenged me and supported me. And you know, if anyone was to ask anyone that knows me, you know, you were very lovely and you kind of sort of shared your thoughts of what it was like to be my friend, you know, and spend time with me. But there is also the shit there as well, isn't there? You know, the people that love me and are closest to me will say, on some days I'm not very kind and I'm not very loving and I'm not very enlightened. That's the truth of being a human being. I think to pretend that we or I would be anything else other than a human being, I'm a spiritual being ultimately, but I'm having this human experience. There's going to be shit. There's going to be times when I fall off the pedestal and I'm not who I aspire to be. That has to be there because that is the fuel, as you've said, and manure, the shit for growth. So I've got to allow some space for those darknesses and less to be there still in my life. It's not going to be plain sailing off into nirvana from here on in. It's still going to be a human journey. And I'd like people to know that about me. You know, I'm not a perfect human being. I'm just work in progress.
Magical, my friend. Well, that feels like a pretty cool place to kind of, you know, to wrap up the conversation, I suppose. How have you found it being on the other end?
Ooh, very cathartic and powerful, but also, as I said, it's a bit frightening because it's like, what did I talk about? Like, does it make sense to anybody other than me? It's just the, like, kind of some random ramblings, isn't it? Or maybe it will make sense. I mean, I'll leave that up to others to. I think that's the secret, isn't it? You leave it up to others to take from it what they will.
Mate, it was great to hear your reflections, and I think, you know, that I just felt that that one of the main things I'll take away from that is the power of real taking the time to really reflect with integrity and to try and get yourself to the kernel. You know, not for someone to get you there, but for you to get yourself to the kernel of now. In a year's time, you know, who knows, but it's the kernel of now, and it's with now that we move forwards, isn't it? So thanks very much for sharing that, mate. I really enjoyed having a conversation with you.
Yeah, all right, well, good luck with the editing as usual. Goodness me.
You've been listening to The Living Project with Josh Bulpin and Cormac Davey.
Enjoyed it? Please subscribe, follow, rate, and share with everyone you know. See you next time.
Be true, live wild.